This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Here with Luke, Elliot, Colby and Hayley, and we want to go back and talk about our earliest video game memories, because I think, you know, it's really important. You know, games are a huge part of pop culture today. It's a huge industry, one of the biggest industries in the world in terms of money and in terms of press. And, you know, I think that it's come a long way from where it used to be. You know, it never used to be this thing that was so common that everyone knew about and everyone played. Everyone's got a console of some kind now, or they play games on their mobile phone. But, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, it was not so accessible, and it was still very niche, and in many cases seen as something just for kids as well.
And I think, you know, this is going to be, I'm really excited to have this conversation, because I think we've got a couple of different generations represented, because I think Luke and I, we're probably
old.
We're old. I think Elliot's probably the generation after us, Mega Drive, I think. And then, you know, Hayley's coming the generation after that. So we've got a couple generations of consoles.
How old do you think I am?
Child.
12.
Much younger than I.
Probably not by much.
Well, I mean, I think where you started is very, it's very telling. I think that, you know, we all grew up in different generations of consoles, that's for sure. I know I give Elliot crap all the time because there's games in the 90s that he literally never even played. And sometimes I mention games where he looks at me blankly like I'm making it up.
It happens. He probably looks at him and is like, yeah, okay, boomer.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I guess, you know, do you guys remember the very first game you ever played? It might not be the one that sticks with you as the one that made you want to play games forever, but like the first time you held a controller and actually played something?
I think the first game I ever played.
This will kind of indicate our ages as well.
Yeah.
I was playing at home, so try and guess.
If I remember correctly, I may be wrong, but I think it was the Super Mario All-Stars cartridge for the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
My mum had bought it as a kind of child minding machine. She's like, go play this and keep out of my hair. So I was like, okay, cool. What's this game? Oh, it's about a rotund Italian man. He's like my landlord. Cool. Oh, he's jumping on small mushrooms. This is amazing.
I think I
was... You skew much younger. So, I mean, what was your first game? Like, friggin'...
Well, it's so interesting because I was trying to... I was literally
Uncharted.
Racking my...
It was Fortnite.
Honestly, I was racking my brain trying to think of what the very first game I ever played was, and I was contemplating going home and like looking through my old game collection to try to answer that question, but I genuinely don't know. I know the first console we had, and this is because I have an older sibling, because as from my earliest memory, our household had a Sega Mega Drive, and so that was our first console. And I remember there being games on there that I wasn't allowed to play initially, but I ended up playing anyway, stuff like, you know, Mortal Kombat or... I don't know, there were heaps. There were heaps of games. And I'm going to guess that those experiences were my first with video games. But to be honest, I was so young that I literally couldn't even... Like, right now, trying to think of the names of these games, I couldn't tell you. So really, it was probably the Nintendo 64 where things kicked off, and it was stuff like Banjo-Kazooie and games like that that really solidified my love affair for gaming. Stuff like GoldenEye and... I don't know. So many games.
All right, Cole, we're going to have a battle of the ages here. What is...
Sega Master System, first console. Okay. Alex Kidd and Miracle World had to have been the first game by default because it was built into the thing.
Right.
So I remember everyone having a Master System, like my friends did as well. So I would have been probably 4 or 5. Alex Kidd.
Yeah, it's weird that, like, Sega is so popular here in Australia that, like, most of the people you talk to is like, yeah, my first console was a Sega console. It's like, yeah, that's so
what
strange.
Happened?
It is different, isn't it? Now, I remember my very first video game was, it's really obvious and blatant, but it was the original Mario,
right,
on the Nintendo.
And it's a classic.
It is a classic. And, you know, this is, I remember, I don't remember exactly how or why it happened, but I remember my parents got me an NES, a Nintendo Entertainment System, and being so excited, like, just, oh my God, this is incredible, and setting it up straight away that morning, and playing Mario.
Tuning it in to the TV.
Well, my dad probably did that for me because I was probably like three or four or whatever. And yeah, playing Mario all day. And I remember showing like other family members who would like stay with us and stuff. I'd be like, come and check this out. And they'd be like, who cares, you know? But I'd be like, this is amazing. You know, I remember that being so important and such a big moment for me having my Nintendo Entertainment System. I did get a Master System as well later on, and then I ended up sort of being a Nintendo fanboy all the way through until the PlayStation came out later in the 90s. But I think I also remember fondly the 64 itself, just for what it did in terms of revolutionizing gaming. Because that was when, you know, 64-bit, it was actually 3D, like proper. You know, you had Mario's face pop up on the screen and you'd use that little hand to like grab his nose and his ears and like pull them and like change the way his face looked.
Distort his face till he looks like some type of eldritch abomination from a Lovecraftian book.
Yeah, like just putty.
Classic Mario.
See, I sort of credit the PlayStation and Saturn for 3D and polygons and things like that. I think they are sort of the genesis.
See, but for me though, it was the 64 that I think brought it to the mainstream, because Nintendo was like this known
and the famous Nintendo 64 Mist as well.
Mist. Oh, yeah, yeah.
The draw distance, is that what we're
gotta love that
to?
Draw distance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, I guess it's funny to have lived through all these different console generations, and now we're coming up to, what is it, like the ninth or something generation that's about to come out later this year, which is crazy to think about that I've lived through most of them.
These companies got us early, right? Like, they hooked us, like, yeah, when we were, what, 4 or 5 years old, and now we're spending all our money on games.
So we all kind it of works. Started, we all started gaming, what, around, like, 4 or 5 years old? Is that kind of...
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, I'm going to guess so, yeah.
Is that's probably normal, right? I guess when you're a little kid, you know. But I mean, I don't know.
It might. You're asking what's normal in a room of people who are dedicated gamers.
We were lucky to have such simple games to play, though. I can't imagine five-year-olds trying to play bloody Tomb Raider.
But five-year-olds kill it. Like, I went to...
beat me on Grand Theft Auto.
I went to a friend's birthday last weekend, and they had their kid there who was, I think, 4 or 5. And he was, like, playing that Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare game.
Oh, yeah.
And he was doing really well, like, better than me. He was, like, killing it, like, bouncing up and down while he was playing and, like, killing everybody. And I thought, wow, I can't imagine young Luke, like, being that switched on and playing those. Maybe I would have been in today's world. I don't know.
Like, I go over to my family's house sometimes, and I watch my young brothers who are like 4 or 5, and they're just like absolutely dunking on each other with games like Jedi Fallen Order and stuff, and it's like, how are you able to play this?
So maybe it is relative, you know, like maybe we would have adapted if we were born today and played these
maybe
really modern
humans
games.
Like evolved to play these games.
Do you think
at younger
humans
ages
have evolved?
Life finds a way.
Yeah, but yeah, it's funny thinking back to when I was a child and the games that really interested me, and I think it's funny because when you're a kid, obviously there are genres that are kind of locked out to you because you don't, you're not able to play them because they're so old and skew that way. Like Doom, for example, back in the 90s.
Not even just that, but, you know, when you're 5 or 6, you don't really know what games are out there, so you're sort of at the mercy of what people buy for you.
Well,
that
even,
was my memory as well.
Even back then, this is like before the internet for most of us,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Elliot, was it before the internet when you started gaming?
It was
gaming,
before
or just
our family had internet.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to say it was before the invention of internet.
No. But before you had internet in your household. So, yeah, you're right. When you're limited to what your parents would get for you, and how do they know what games are good and what is out there?
I got a lot of my games through cereal boxes and giveaways, and I feel like PC
really?
Games back in those times, at least from my memory, there were so many games that were just like thrown away and given away in
Age of Empires,
different promotions. Absolutely, yeah. Different promotions and stuff. I have no idea how they made their money thinking back to it now, but yeah, I had a massive PC game collection just from whatever tat I was able to scramble up.
I remember having a lot of those demo discs from PC Mags, which would have full games on them sometimes as well. I remember also collecting those and having a full range of PC games I was playing, like Worms, for example. That was a really great freebie.
And
classic.
The demos were long enough that you could just play the demo.
Yeah.
You know, because I played the Worms demo.
You just replay it over and over again.
Exactly right.
It was a simpler time.
But yeah, you know, when it's before the internet and you are relying on game magazines or going to your local, I don't know, Blockbuster Video and seeing stuff. What games they have on the shelf to rent. Yeah. I remember going every weekend and I would get like a new game every weekend to try it out. I didn't know what they were. And my parents would just like grab them off the shelf for me and be like, yeah, thanks. Yeah, it wasn't until I got a bit older and really knew what the hell was going on. And I started getting gaming magazines and then the internet came in and you're like...
Yeah, like when you learn to read.
Yeah. And all of a sudden there's like hype for games and that's a whole different thing. But today, I mean, there's free games today that you can get everywhere that are games like Fortnite, which I know like lots of people friggin' love Fortnite. Lots of kids love Fortnite as well. You can't discount how popular it is and how accessible gaming is today. But yeah, we're a different generation today. Everyone knows what's out there. You know, there's reviews and there's hype generation, there's PR teams behind gaming. It just wasn't the same back then.
Well, you didn't know what a game was going to be like until you actually played it yourself, because you couldn't see any footage of it. You'd go off the cover, the pictures on the back.
Correct.
And then see how you went, and sometimes it was good and sometimes it wasn't.
And gaming magazines would have reviews like a month after the game had come out because of the timing of the magazine. So,
or if it's a quarterly magazine, like God knows when you'll finally get to hear about it.
So you never really knew what you were getting until you got it, you know? Which is really, really interesting.
It was a different time. It was definitely a different time.
We've had some really good memories of people messaging in from when they were younger. So Bree, one of our checkpointers, mentioned a fond gaming memory of sitting on her dad's lap while he played Half-Life 2. And that he was really proud when she grew up and bought her own copy and finished it later on down the line.
Yeah, and I think a lot of... us probably were introduced to video games by, well, us younger people were introduced to video games by their parents as well. It was definitely, your parents had to allow and facilitate the process, and especially if they were switched on, they would probably be engaged in it to make sure they're aware of what their kids were doing.
Which is funny.
I don't know about that.
Well, you know what? And sometimes they'd be fully aware of what you were doing and wouldn't care. Like, I remember playing Mortal Kombat on Super Nintendo against my dad. Like playing together as like a 7-year-old and doing fatalities. And I thought it was so great when you'd like do an uppercut and the blood would spurt out in that ridiculous way.
I'm just impressed you could do fatalities. To this day, I can't do them in the first couple of games.
I think it was a gaming magazine that had the in the back, you know.
Oh, I know the buttons. I just still can't do them.
It wasn't a good hit rate, but I know it was possible. But yeah, I don't think he cared. I used to play Doom on PC at his work. I sit there and play it. He'd be like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Just killing aliens, like gore, like everywhere." And I'm completely normal and not affected by that at all today.
Hooray!
Hooray!
They were wrong.
All the voices in my head agree. Look, you know, I mean, Edie mentioned watching her brother play Ocarina of Time. We had Patrick message saying, Pong, yes, I am that old, with a sad face.
Got a shout out to Roger with Manic Miner on there. Good old Spicky as well. That's a good call.
I don't know what that is.
It's a computer from the 80s.
Well, there you go.
It's classic.
Oh, the Spectrum, the Specky. Okay.
Yeah, so other cool.
I thought you were talking about, like, is he like jumping on people's back during a football game or playing video games?
Ooh, Michael mentioned,
I don't know how to describe
Super
it.
Mario World. We had Scott mentioning Frogger on the Atari. And then we had Omi, who's a younger generation like you, Elliot, who mentioned Gex, Undercover Gecko on the PlayStation. So lots of mixed early gaming memories for a lot of people. But it might not have been the first game that you played that really got you to fall in love with gaming. That might have come at a later time. So we're going to talk more about that here on Checkpoint on Joy.
Let's get to it already!
Looking for some more awesome Checkpoint goodness? We have a huge range of podcasts available to listen to on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you enjoy premium podcasts. All our previous shows and exclusive content is available. You can even listen to us while you game. Just search for Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 and download new episodes every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. Here on Checkpoint on Joy, broadcasting nationwide on the Community Radio Network. I'm Luke, here with Elliot, Colby, and Haley, and we're talking about our earliest gaming memories. But, you know, we've talked about the games that we first played, that we very first got involved in. But I think that oftentimes it's a game that comes later, when you're a bit older usually, that you can actually remember more intricately, that is kind of the thing that really gets you involved in video games on a deeper level. So I'll kick this off, because I remember for me, it was a game that came out, I think it was 2000, 2001 maybe, Silent Hill 2.
Oh.
This is a big one for you, Luke. It is a big one for me.
You mention it constantly.
I do mention it a lot because it's the best game ever made. But no, for me, Silent Hill 2, it was a horror game. You know, the first Silent Hill was on PlayStation, and it scared the heck out of me. Like, I remember playing this game and having...
That was a terrifying game. I played the demo, and that was enough for me.
Genuine nightmares from that game when I was, like, 10.
I could not play it. It was too scary. I was like, this is too spooky. I'm never touching this again.
I remember renting it from my local video, like Video Easy or whatever it was, and just coming home and playing the first scene and literally crying. Like, it was like, what have I done? You know, like, I was 10. How does this happen? Why did my mum let me rent this?
Was that not was that a restricted game?
Our ratings weren't here back then. Really? It was just M. Oh. And because games were still like getting into that point where they were violent, so people didn't really know.
Flying past those senses.
Yeah. So anyway, here's me in this alleyway getting killed by demons with blood everywhere. Great. Totally worked out fine for me again. But Silent Hill 2, the reason why Silent Hill 2 resonates so much with me and is this game that I say really got me hooked into video games on a deeper level, was the first game that I played that really had this kind of complicated, interesting story to it. And the story of Silent Hill 2 was so deep and so complex and had these amazing cutscenes, which at the time, I'd never seen beautiful, realistic cutscenes like that. They probably don't hold up that well today, but at the time, I was like, this is unbelievable. It's like
this
I'm
is
watching,
the future.
Yeah, this is the future. I'm watching a movie while I'm playing. This is incredible. And Silent Hill 2, it just had these really well thought out story beats. It was a great game as well. It was horror, which has sort of kept my love affair of horror going to this day as well. It's a real shame that Silent Hill is not a successful franchise still, because it had some real fumbles and issues with development and publishing at Konami. But yeah, Silent Hill 2, I guess, just took it from being games are games to games can be so much more. They can be a story, they can be characterization, they can be acting, they can be soundtrack, they can be this entire spectacle. And it took that game, you know, when I was about 14, 15 years old, to really kind of have that light bulb moment in my life where I went, this is everything to me. Like, I love this so, so much. I firmly believe that's the reason why I'm so involved in the gaming industry as I am today, because that game just changed my perspective completely. Did you guys have a game that it might have had that sort of cultural shift that I had? Because I know I'm...
I won't be as good as my example.
I won't be as good as my example, but I do have a game.
But yeah, what is what would be your...
For me, that game would have been Ocarina of Time, and it's one of those games that definitely has a very special place in my heart. I would have been about 9. I'd always, like, as I said before, like, gaming had been one of, kind of present in my life. It was one of those things was like, get out of my hair and go play the Super Nintendo. But I had gone over to a friend's place because I was spending a lot of time away from home because I didn't have the most stable home life. And I remember my friend being like, let me show you this awesome game that I've just beaten. And he shows me the final boss for Ocarina of Time with the huge piano and Ganon just sitting there playing it. And I was just hooked. That kid would go on like 2 weeks later to sell me his copy because he got bored. And I just like, and so I rented a 64 from Video Easy, and I sat there playing it. And that game, I don't know what it was about it, but it immediately got its like claws in me. And during the entire chaos of like my childhood, it became this really safe space that I'd keep like returning to repeatedly. And I credit it as being the game that kind of ruined my life, because it turned me into a massive weeb. Because it got me interested in anime, and it got me like, it was the reason why I got a GameCube. And the GameCube led to my first JRPG, which was Tales of Symphonia. And then that was just downhill from there.
I remember, like, when I played that game for the first time when it came out, after you, like, beat, you know, Kokiri Forest, when you first go into, like, the field at the start, it was like nothing I've ever seen before. It was incredible.
The biggest open world you'd ever seen.
It was amazing. It had a day-night cycle and everything.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful game.
What was your turning point, Colby? Do you have a game that really changed everything?
So, the first game, so as we were saying before, you know, usually you just have what you sort of have or what you're given. The first game I really wanted for myself was Super Mario Bros. 3. Because I had a NES, liked Mario, but now what I know is hype. I was totally hyped for that game, and I think everyone was, you know, so...
Did you, like, watch The Wiz just to see, like, the preview of that game?
That was too young for me, but the Mario 3 cartoon came out before the game.
Ah.
And the cartoon, it was pretty awesome, but it had, you know, it always would start off with the overworld from the game. So it featured a lot of music from the game. It introduced all the characters, introduced the worlds and levels and things like that. And so when that game finally came out, it's like you're playing the bloody cartoon. It's like I already knew the characters. And, you know, you'd be doing levels and, oh, this is from the cartoon. And it's an amazing game as well. 8 worlds. It's the blueprint for Mario games. Loads of secrets. Varied levels. It's just an incredible game. I love it.
Elliot, did you have...
My awakening.
Your awakening. Your video game awakening.
Oh, video... Oh, that's different. Okay. Yeah, I definitely did. As I'm... Like, I think... Like, reminiscing in the past and thinking back to when I was a kid, games didn't even have genres. Yeah. Games didn't even have genres then, in my mind. Of course, they absolutely did. But, like, every new game you played was a new experience. And you're like, this is unlike anything else before. And of course it was. There would have been so much before it. But I just didn't have the... you know, the pool of knowledge to understand that. Exactly. So I remember playing my first RPG on the PC because I was, even when I was younger, I got into PC gaming pretty quick. And it was a game called, and here we go, Vampire the Masquerade Redemption.
Oh, yep.
Oh, no.
Excellent.
You love this game.
I do love this game. And it's funny because both my brother and I would play this and we would play it. And when we finished it, we would play it again. And it was just this game that had a scope of nothing I'd ever seen before. Because prior to that, I was playing stuff on my Sega or my Nintendo 64 or whatever. And they were fantastic games, don't get me wrong. But there was probably, I guess, a lack of maturity there or less of a focus on storytelling and narrative. And all of a sudden, when I jump into this big RPG and it's this... entire journey of your character chasing after, you know, the love of their life through different ages of the, like, literal ages, going from the dark ages to modern day times because you're a vampire, you just exist through it all. Just desperate to have this one mission to rescue the kind of woman you fell in love with who has also been turned into a vampire. Spoiler alert for a, like, 20-year-old game.
But how dare you?
It was, yeah, it was eye-opening. It was, like, it was crazy how video games could be this giant, persistent journey with all these intricate information and details and dialogue and weapon systems and, you know, inventory management. I still remember sliding around things to fit in my inventory like a little game of Tetris because that's what it was back then. And, yeah, it, honestly, I think that would probably be the game... that kicked off my love for gaming.
Yeah, I think it is often, you know, I know Colby and Haley, your references were quite young. You know, I think that I played all these games, you know, like your Mario and your Ocarina of Time and stuff like that. But I think when you play something that's a bit more mature in theme as well, I feel like, for me at least, that's kind of when gaming becomes, I don't know, more serious or, yeah, or more connected to the real world.
Yeah, I suppose that's definitely like the case of being like, oh, well, games can be mature and stuff. But I think like in terms of that kind of eye-opening moment of being like, oh, wow, Ocarina of Time is this amazing open world and I've never played anything like it before. It's kind of like it still can count as that kind of awakening.
Oh, I God, so. Yeah, I mean, everybody's got something different that they'll connect with and remember from gaming. And the reality is, I'm sure we've all had various different eye-opening moments while playing where it's like, oh, my God, games can be, you know, this open, or, oh, my God, games can be this mature, or whatever.
Like, for me, it was just around, you know, because I liked playing games, but this is where it's like, I want to spend a lot of my time doing this. And, you know, you know, then I moved to the Mega Drive and it was just all over.
I know video games definitely have connected with us in a really big way. And I'm sure everyone has their own personal video game connection story. So thanks for those who shared theirs with us. That's all the time we have for today. Elliot, thank you for joining
us. Thank you, Luke.
Colby, thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
Haley, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's been great going back and reminiscing with you all about our earliest video game memories. And we are going to end the show with some soundtrack from the Ocarina of Time from the Gerudo Valley. So this one's kind of for you, Haley.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, thank you for listening. And we'll catch you next week with more Checkpoint Goodness on the Community Radio Network. And joy.
You've been listening to a Joycast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.